So today we are reaching the next to last message in this series. It's called A Fresh Start. We've been in it since the first Sunday in January, looking at different pictures in Scripture of people, sometimes groups of people who need a fresh start and how they receive those fresh starts. And today, the title of the message is Not Strong Enough. Can you believe it? Easter's coming 2 weeks from today. So next week, we'll do the last sermon in this series and then something different on Easter Sunday. But today, we're going to talk about someone who is not strong enough. And ironically, based on the title, we're actually going to be talking about one of the strongest people on the entire, in all the pages of Scripture, and that is Samson. We're going to be looking at Samson's life and how he needed a fresh start. And I would argue he actually needed multiple fresh starts, but we're going to just look at the final one today. But before we read sort of the last few events of his life, I want to give you a really, really brief, quick synopsis of Samson's life so far. I realized I had a strangely difficult time getting this message started and finding a place to land. I actually sent Andy a message early in the week, and I said, listen, at some point, we're just going to have to do an entire 6 to 8 weeks on Samson's life, because there is just so much stuff there to get through, to learn from, and so someday we'll do that in the future. But to give you a really brief synopsis so we understand where we're landing when we read today's passage, here's Samson's life in a nutshell. His parents were visited by an angel before he was born, informing them that their son, and it would be their first child, it would be the end of the barrenness for his mother, so this is sort of a miraculous birth situation, but their son, they were told, should be dedicated as a Nazirite. And you go, what does that mean? Well, you can read all about it in Exodus chapter 6, but here's the really quick scenario. As a Nazirite, he would be prohibited from touching any dead body, really even being near a dead body. That included even if his parents or his sibling died, he would not be allowed to go anywhere near even that dead body. He could not eat or drink anything from the vine, meaning he could not have wine, he could not have grapes, he could not have grape juice, he couldn't even have measly shriveled up raisins, nothing from the vine. And he could not ever, ever cut his hair with a razor. And his mom was told, you need to abide by these things even while you're carrying him because he will be dedicated in this way. Now, Samson is born. There is much rejoicing. He grows up. Eventually, he thinks, I need a wife. But instead of finding a wife from among the Israelite people, he goes into the Philistine territory. Well, you need to know about that. The Philistines are very big in Samson's story. They are not only Gentiles, so they're non-Jewish. They're also pagans. They have this whole set of gods that they worship. And Samson, for whatever reason, thinks, I don't want to find a girl in my hometown. I'm going to go to the Philistine territory. Needless to say, things did not go well at that point. Briefly, Samson made a wager with his new friends that he made through his new bride based on a riddle that he had made up himself. He ends up losing the wager because he confided in his wife about the answer, and she gave away his secret. Put a pin in that. That'll come up again. So, he ends up losing the wager, he gets angry, but he has to pay off his debt, so he kills 30 guys in order to take their clothes to pay off the debt for losing the wager. He goes back to his own hometown, very angry, and his father-in-law gives away his new bride to one of the groomsmen from the wedding. But later, he goes back to that town thinking he'll go visit his wife and finds out, oh, she's no longer my wife, she's been given to someone else. Understandably, he's a little frustrated. How does he respond? He sets a bunch of crops on fire. He essentially burns their harvest to the ground using foxes and torches. It's a great story. We'll go over it in detail sometime. But in response to finding out that Samson has burned down their crops, what do? Well, they find his ex-wife and her father, and they burn them to death. Kind of one-upping them a little bit there. So then Samson finds out that they did that, and he responds by killing a whole bunch more people. Eventually, he goes back to his own people, but the Philistines want to further punish him, so he has his people tie him up, even though he knows he can get free. It looks like sort of an extradition arrangement, and during the prisoner swap, Samson breaks free of the ropes that he's tied in, and he goes on to kill 1,000 Philistines with what weapon of choice? The jawbone of a donkey, of course. The first thing you would probably choose. So after being exhausted from all the killing, he cries out to God, he's so thirsty, I'm going to die of thirst, and God opens up a hole in the ground so that he can have a drink. So that's a really brief synopsis of something we'll dig into deeply some other time. But keep in mind this, is Samson's story crazy? Undoubtedly crazy. But from the very early moments of his life, we read in the story in Judges that the Lord, at a young age, began to stir within him. The Spirit stirred within him. And if you read his story, at pivotal moments in his life, you're told that the Spirit of God came upon him strongly. Okay, so that's the Samson that we're entering into at this point. Pick it up in Judges chapter 16, starting in verse 4, and we will stop momentarily at verse 21. Sometime later, he fell in love with a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. The rulers of the Philistines went to her and said, "See if you can lure him into showing you the secret of his great strength, and how we can overpower him so we may tie him up and subdue him. Each one of us will give you 1,100 shekels of silver." So Delilah said to Samson, "Tell me the secret of your great strength, and how you can be tied up and subdued." Well, Samson answered her, "If anyone ties me with 7 fresh bowstrings that have not been dried, I will become as weak as any other man." Then the rulers of the Philistines brought her 7 fresh bowstrings that had not been dried, and she tied him with them. And with men hidden in the room, she called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." But he snapped the bowstrings as easily as a piece of string snaps when it comes close to a flame. So the secret of his strength was not discovered. Then Delilah said to Samson, "You have made a fool of me. You lied to me. Come now and tell me how you can be tied." And he said, "If anyone ties me securely with new ropes that have never been used, I will become as weak as any other man." So Delilah took the new ropes and tied him up with them. And then, with men hidden in the room, she called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." But he snapped the ropes off his arms as if they were threads. Delilah then said to Samson, "All this time you've been making a fool of me and lying to me. Tell me how you can be tied." And he replied, "Well, if you weave the 7 braids of my head into the fabric on the loom and tighten it with a pin, I'll become as weak as any other man." So while he was sleeping, Delilah took the 7 braids from his head and wove them into fabric and tightened it with a pin. And again she called to him, you know the line, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." He awoke from his sleep and he pulled up the pin and the loom with the fabric. Then she said to him, "How can you say I love you when you won't confide in me? This is the 3rd time that you've made a fool of me and haven't told me the secret of your great strength." With such nagging, she prodded him day after day until he was sick to death of it. So he told her everything. "No razor has ever been used on my head," he said, "because I have been a Nazarite dedicated to God from my mother's womb. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me and I would become as weak as any other man." When Delilah saw that he had told her everything, she sent word to the rulers of the Philistines, "Come back once more. He's told me everything." So the rulers of the Philistines returned with silver in their hands. And after putting him to sleep on her lap, she called for someone to shave off the 7 braids of his hair. And so began to subdue him, and his strength left him. And then she called, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." And he awoke from his sleep and thought, "I'll go out as before and shake myself free." But he did not know that the Lord had left him. And then the Philistines seized him. They gouged out his eyes and took him down to Gaza, binding him with bronze shackles. They set him to grinding grain in the prison. So, a man desperately in need of a fresh start. So let's look at, like we have done before, let's first look at the root of the issue. How did he come to be in the place where he needs this fresh start? Well, a lot of it has to do with the pre-story we didn't go into today. But just looking at today's stuff, here's the first realization. Despite prior experience, Samson returns to the same place where he's run into trouble in the past, this place called the Valley of Sorek, which is near where he found his first wife, and he meets another woman. This time her name is Delilah. So in other words, against all logic, we, like Samson, often end up in the places and situations where failure gets repeated over and over and over again. don't know about you, I watched a little bit of the Winter Olympics that were on this past season, and I caught some of the snowboarding, and I was just amazed at the snowboarders, how fast, how high, the flips, the turns, the spins, right? And I was sort of in awe and amazed, but at the same time, I found myself wondering, how many times did they try that and failed miserably? Like, how many times did they get up so fast and so high and then, plump, like, face plant right into the snow? How many cycles of failure did they go through? We see Samson returning to a place, a situation, a circumstance where he has experienced failure before. And it's not like it's just any old place. It's a place where, don't forget, he's probably still infamous because he's killed a lot of people in that area. And the surviving children and widows of the men that he has slain probably haven't forgotten his name, have not forgotten what he has done to them. There's a famous quote you've probably heard before. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. First coined by George Santayana in 1905, and other people have used it and adapted it, including Winston Churchill in 1948. In other words, those who are unable or unwilling to learn from the past are simply bound and condemned to repeat it over and over again. And I think that's what we see in Samson's life right here. It's interesting that the text mentions the Valley of Sorek. The Valley of Sorek, that word Sorek, if you translate it into English, it actually means the choicest vine. So not only is he returning to a place where he is infamous, he's going to get another wife from outside of his people, he's going to a place that is in that day known for having the best grapes and making the finest wine. Seriously? Like, if you're a Nazirite, this is one of the last places you belong. We talked last week or the week before about just being in places you don't belong. A Nazirite has no business being in a place like this, and yet that's where we find him. And again, just like the earlier story, people attempt to use Samson's love interest to get to him in order to weaken him and defeat him. I think a reminder to us that the forces that work against your good will often grab for what I call the same handles, as long as they can. Here's what I mean by that. I think that the forces that work against your good, the evil spiritual forces in this world, sometimes the flesh and blood forces in this world, if you have particular handles that are that for you are things that drag you, or you're able to be dragged by those handles, don't be surprised if those same handles get used over and over again. And they promise her money, right? They promise her 1,100 shekels per liter. If you read the story earlier, you know there are 5 liters, so 1,100 times 5, 5,500 shekels. Now, since probably most of you don't have a shekel in your pocket or in your purse today, here's a frame of reference. In the story of Joseph, you remember Joseph is sold into slavery by his brothers. According to the price that was paid for Joseph, this amount of shekels would be able to buy 275 slaves. This is not a small sum of money. If you tried to convert it into today's dollars, and it's hard, it's an imprecise thing, but if you take the shekel and you sort of move into the New Testament and how much it was worth compared to a daily wage for a laborer, you roughly get a number of about $2 million. Okay, so this is not pocket change. Delilah wants this to succeed for her own benefit. But surely Samson won't fall for the same trap again, right? And not only does he fall for it again, he falls for it multiple times. Now, to be fair, the first few times he keeps his secret safe, so it's like he's sort of toying with them. But he falls for it multiple times. I think a reminder to us that sometimes even repeated brushes with disaster will not deter us from what we desire. When there's something in this life we have just decided we have to have it, it doesn't matter how many times we are almost led to disaster. It doesn't matter how many times we come up to the edge of the cliff and we look over and we can see how far down that is. We've decided, but we just have to have this thing. No matter how many times we come close to the edge. I read through that story, though, and I think, what was Samson doing? Is he sort of like toying with this woman and her conspirers? You know, well, tie me up with bowstrings. Okay, fine, this time, tie me up with new ropes, but they have to be new and high quality. Go to Home Depot, find the best you can find. None of that small stuff, the thick stuff, that'll do it. My favorite one's the last one. If you sew my hair into a loom and tighten it with a pin, that's what'll do it. And I read that story, and he's supposedly asleep while that happens. How many of you think you could sleep while having your hair sewn into a loom and tightened down with a pin? Part of me wonders, was he actually awake and pretending to be asleep, thinking, oh, this is going to be great. When they wake me up this time, it's going to be hilarious. Because I'm just going to jump up and get free, just like I did before. And yet he never leaves Delilah. Why does he not leave? It's painfully clear at this point that she is betraying him. In fact, betraying him to the point that his life is in danger. Why does he stay with her? And that question troubled me all week long until, as usually happens, Scripture ends up turning in and I ask myself the question. And I sort of want to reflect that to you today. Why do we remain in the same habits and cycles that bring us pain, that bring us temptation, and bring us frustration? Why do we do that? Because I think it's easy to externalize the Samson story. It happens over here, right, to that guy because he's so dumb. But if we look at our own lives, I look back at mine, I know, yeah, there are times when, against all logic, I stay in the same patterns, in the same mess. Why? Well, Samson's hoodwinked three times, and Delilah's now really frustrated. You know, before it was like, please tell me. Now she's like, you say you love me? You don't really love me? How can you say you love me and not share with me this secret? And we're told in verse 16, I love this phrase, this passage. With such nagging, she prodded him day after day until he was sick to death of it. Right? I think teaching us that there are times when someone or something puts consistent and unbearable pressure on us, making release seem like it is literally the only option no matter what the cost might be. I mean, you've all been there at one point in time. Maybe you're there right now in your life. I remember being there as a parent of a young child. Daddy, can we? No. Daddy, hey, daddy, can we? No. Hey, daddy, can we? No. Daddy, hey, daddy, hey, daddy, hey, daddy, hey, daddy, hey, daddy, hey, daddy. Fine! You can, 10 minutes. That's it. But we've all been in a place in life where the pressure is consistent to the point where it becomes almost unbearable and we think, no matter what it takes, I've got to make this stop. And the word for prodded there can be also be translated pressed or pushed. In some places in the Old Testament, it's translated as oppressed or distressed. So this is strong. This is not, oh, Samson, Samson, please. It's not, I don't even know what that is. It's not playful annoyance. It's hard. It's deep. It's a strong pressure that eventually Samson just is like, I can't deal with this anymore. And so he ends up telling her the truth. And it's one thing for Samson to toy with this woman and her conspirers to pretend he's giving away a secret, but then he actually does. And as I read that this week, it sort of hit me like a ton of bricks, this truth, that we must be very watchful of our own strength. We have to be really, really watchful of our strengths. Now, not fearful. We don't need to be fearful of our strengths. But we do need to be watchful. Let me put it this way. If someone in this room gave me a random passage of 6 to 8 verses, and you let me go in a room by myself with my laptop for 30 minutes, I could probably come out and preach a halfway decent sermon for 15 or 20 minutes. I'm not saying that to like brag, I'm just saying that's my strength, that's what I do. And many of you have strengths where you do things like that in many different areas that I can't. Some of you can look at a kitchen and rehab an entire kitchen in a weekend. I mean, plumbing, electric, walls, the whole nine yards. Some of you, maybe it's with accounting. You can look at spreadsheets and numbers and clickety-clack and taxes get done in 15 minutes time. Not me. Maybe some of you, it's something like cooking. You take a whole bunch of different ingredients and you add a little heat and a little time and you make something that's absolutely delicious. I could not do that. Maybe it's car repair. Maybe you're like the car whisperer, and you can simply hear the engine and go, I know exactly what needs to be done, and then you can do it and be done in a couple hours' time. Maybe it's childcare. Maybe you're one of those people who can watch 2 or 3 or 4 children who are like kindergarten and younger and not only survive but thrive. And to that I say, I don't get it. Or maybe it's music or art, maybe just something that comes easily to you. And those strengths are great. Don't be afraid of them. It's not a bad thing. Those are gifts from God. But I think the problem comes, as it did for Samson, is when we start to have confidence in those gifts and strengths and we forget the giver of the gift and the strength. We start to think, maybe it's actually all just me. Maybe I could just do this on my own. And they become almost idolatrous distractions from the God who has given us all things. And that's where Samson falls. And his faith, I think, in his own strength costs him his freedom. Delilah shaves off all his hair. The Philistines come in. He wakes up, and the text says that Samson kind of says, you know, I'll just do like I did before. I'll shake off these ties, no problem. But he can't break free. And then we read what I think is arguably one of the saddest sentences in all the Bible. He did not know that the Lord had left him. I got stuck on that sentence this week. He did not know that the Lord had left him. You have to deal with, like, what does that even mean? You know, does God abandon him? Well, I would argue no, because of what happens later in the story. And how do we square this with both Old and New Testament promises where God says, I will never leave you, I will never forsake you? I'll tell you what I think when it says that the Lord left him, it's the absence of God's divinely assigned strength has been now withheld from Samson. And I think that that leaving that God does is a direct result of Samson saying, I don't care about my conviction, I don't care about my calling, I only care about myself. And so something drastic has changed when we read that the Lord had left him. And not only does he lose his freedom, right? He has his eyes gouged out, and they put him to work in the prison. And what job does he get? We're told grinding grain. Here's what's interesting about that. In that day, in that culture, that time, that would have been called women's work. So not only are they putting him to work in chains, they're giving him work that is intended to demean him. Oh, you're a strong guy? Yeah, grind some grain. So now he's at the bottom. This is where he needs desperately intervention. We pick it up in Genesis, Judges chapter 16. But the hair on his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. And the rulers of the Philistines, they assembled to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to celebrate, saying, our God has delivered Samson, our enemy, into our hands. When the people saw him, they praised their God, saying, our God has delivered our enemy into our hands, the one who laid waste our land, burned our crops, and multiplied our slain with a donkey's jawbone. While they were in high spirits, they shouted, bring out Samson to entertain us. And so they called Samson out of the prison, and he performed for them. And when they stood him among the pillars, Samson said to the servants who held his hand, put me where I can feel the pillars that support the temple so that I may lean against them. Now the temple was crowded with men and women. All the rulers of the Philistines were there. And on the roof, there were about 3,000 men and women watching Samson perform. And then Samson prayed to the Lord, sovereign Lord, remember me, please, God, strengthen me. Just one more time. So just on the heels of what I labeled one of the most tragically sad sentences in all the Bible, he did not know the Lord left him, we have what I would argue is one of the most cleverly hopeful lines of the Bible when it says, but his hair on his head began to grow. As soon as it was shaved, it began to grow again. You see, God's grace is being poured out over us even in the darkest times, even if we don't feel the presence of God's grace. I don't know if Samson had faith to believe yet that his strength was coming back because his hair was growing, but it's clear that when that hair began to grow, that something began to change all over again. Even with his blatant disregard for God's covenant blessing, even with his eyes gouged out, even being chained as a prisoner and doing work meant to demean him, the redemptive power of God was already at work. I envision Samson's hands being all calloused from grinding grain, and I wonder as he ran his fingers along his head, how long did it take before that stubbly growth could actually be felt through the calluses of his hands? Because it was even before then that God was at work. As soon as those first little scraggles of growth started to pop through. Now, it wasn't enough for them to blind Samson or to imprison him. They also wanted him to essentially be a royal court jester at a big festival. Come, perform for us, right? Now, this is the way things worked in ancient times, because if you could hold captive one of your biggest opponents, you would then embarrass them at any chance that you possibly could get. Also, let's not forget, they kind of want some payback. Okay, remember, this guy killed a lot of people and burned down a lot of crops. So Samson performs, and probably tired from all his entertaining, he asks, can I just lean against the temples that support, the pillars that support the temple? I just need to catch my breath for a second after all this entertaining that I'm doing. And whether the thought was already running through his mind or if it's when he was there among the pillars, he begins to get this idea that maybe he has one more opportunity to use his strength. And so he prays two very simple things. Sovereign Lord, remember me. Please, God, strengthen me just one more time. I think a reminder to all of us, if you ever feel like God has forgotten you, you can cry out to be remembered. Because God is not far off. God is not deaf to your voice. And God has not written you off, not ever, no matter what. Because if anybody deserved to be written off, to be forgotten, to have his voice not heard, it's probably Samson. And yet, in the middle of that weakest moment, with no sight, with chains holding him, tired from entertaining his enemy, Samson says, Lord, please remember me. And then, this is key, he acknowledges where his strength actually came from. God, I need you to strengthen me. It wasn't my strength ever. And I need you to strengthen me one last time. And then we see it happen in the aftermath, Judges 16, 29, and 30. Samson reached toward the two central pillars on which the temple stood, bracing himself against them, his right hand on one, his left hand on the other. And Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. And then he pushed with all his might, and down came the temple on the rulers and all the people in it, and thus he killed many more when he died than even when he lived. God answers Samson's plea, showing us that he's really not that far off. And with a final act of strength, not only does Samson avenge his enemies, which is what he wants, but he also embarrasses Dagon. I mean, this is a celebration of Dagon's honor, and now it's all come crumbling down. We're told that Samson delivered a much bigger blow to the enemy with his death than even with his life. And his life was extraordinary in its accomplishments, was it not? Reminds me a little bit about Jesus, whose life was full of miraculous, extraordinary stuff, teaching, healing, preaching, but it was in his death that he accomplished even more. Although I'd put it this way, Samson died with the Philistines for the sake of revenge. Jesus died for all sinners for the sake of restoration. Now, the New Testament ends up recounting sort of a hall of fame of faith in Hebrews chapter 11, the most faithful people. And do you know who shows up on that list? Abraham. Kidding, no, it's Samson. I mean, Abraham's there too, but Samson is on the list of the most faithful people? How does that make any sense? But we read his name there on the list, and then one of the phrases associated with these heroes of the faith, I think, perfectly describes him in Hebrews 11. It says, their weakness was turned to strength. Reminds me of what Paul says in 2 Corinthians 12. He writes these words, the Lord said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. I said earlier we need to be watchful of our strength, and it's still true, but it's also true. We need to gladly embrace our weakness. Paul even says, I delight in my weakness. Can I be honest with you? Not there yet. Still rather frustrated with my weaknesses. But Paul says, I realize through the power of the Spirit that where I am weak, that is opportunity for the strength of God to be more even fully overflowing in my life. So a couple things to think about as we finish our time together this morning, as we respond to what we have heard today through Scripture and by the Spirit. Here's the first one. Have you been stuck in a pattern of repeated failure or near disaster in the recent past? Are you feeling constant and overbearing pressure or prodding? Then I invite you, with this time of reflection we're going to enjoy in a moment, ask God to give you wisdom and perseverance to change. Do what Samson didn't do. Secondly, what are your biggest strengths? And have any of them caused you to diminish or even disregard the one who gives you strength? Have you started to think, oh, that's all me. I can probably just do that on my own. Lastly, what are your biggest weaknesses? Ask God to be strong in those areas as you try to delight in them. Let's just start with accepting them, maybe. But maybe we can get to a point where, like Paul, we can say, I delight in my weakness because that's where God actually makes me the most strong. So take a moment or two to pray, to allow the Spirit to speak to your heart. And then I'm going to close us with prayer in just a moment.